This is Zone One Radio.
Zone One Radio.
I'm Zeph, Zone One Radio's illegitimate expat son. We start the show every week with the Star Spangled Banner. Never has it been more apt, as this week we are talking amendments and we're talking constitutions. We're talking America itself, here on the Email from America. And as always on the show, lots and lots and lots of great American music, such as this song, Amblin' Alp, from Yeasayer.
Guns, guns, guns!
Ooh, guns, guns, guns. Those are the words of Kurtwood Smith as villain Clarence Boddicker in the original RoboCop. That is the only 80s pop culture reference you're going to get this week. As I said at the top of the show, we're taking things, well, a little bit more seriously here on the Email from America. Now, let me read to you the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. 26 words, and yet at the moment, never was so much volatility contained in one single sentence. Guns, gun rights, gun control, gun violence, gun anything, the public discourse, the political discord, has never been higher or more intense when it comes to the place of firearms in American life. To accentuate the negative, nary a week goes by without an act of senseless violence occurring with a firearm in the lead role. But instead of educated, informed discussion to seek a solution, we have the sometimes emotive fear-mongering of the National Rifle Association on one side, and the sometimes emotive fear-mongering of, well, of Piers Morgan on the other. That's why it's our privilege this week to have as our guest Adam Winkler, a professor of constitutional law at UCLA. 2 years ago, he wrote Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Professor Winkler took the landmark Supreme Court case, District of Columbia versus Heller, which invalidated a law that restricted residents from owning firearms, as a starting point for an examination of the history of gun rights and how they, as much as race, religion, or social status, are the ultimate proving ground for America's psyche and cultural identity. To say his work is a seminal inspection of the lines of the debate would be an understatement, though to say that anything is definitive in the ever-shifting emotional sands of this issue would be a mistake. But no one knows more than Professor Winkler when it comes to the perspective of the entire landscape. From cable news to public radio, from web pages of the Huffington Post and the New Republic, Professor Winkler is regarded as the preeminent expert in the discussion of gun rights. Adam, the first question I'd like to ask you, Europeans are almost naive in their understanding of America's relationship with guns. Can you quickly give an overview as to maybe what the framers were searching for with the Second Amendment, what it meant then, and perhaps what it means now?
Sure. So first of all, thanks for having me on your program. I really appreciate it and the chance to talk to your audience. One of the reasons why Americans hold so tightly to the Second Amendment deals with the country's reverence for the Constitution and the Second Amendment in particular. The Second Amendment provides that, quote, a well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, comma, shall not be infringed, period. And it's almost as if James Madison, the author of this provision, had just discovered this wonderful new thing, the comma, and wanted to put it in there as many times as possible. And so the language has kind of confused Americans for many generations, but the overwhelming view of courts and of legal commentators and great jurists over the years has been that the Second Amendment protects the right of individuals to have guns for personal protection, that the reference to the militia in the Second Amendment was really about protecting the right of all able-bodied men to have guns and serve in the militia if need be, but that the underlying right reaches beyond that. Part of the reason why the Second Amendment has been so popular in America may be just the fact of our own unique historical circumstances, life on a frontier where there were threats from hostile natives, a society with slavery, which required firearms to enforce slavery, to ensure that people did not run away or escape. And sort of the vast open frontier of the American West, which was a feature of life consistently in America from the time of the founding fathers and before them even, up until the 1900s, early 1900s, when the frontier was officially closed. So there's this long history of access to guns, unique historical circumstances and geographical circumstances that help explain why Americans have continued to have use for guns. And today, I think part of the story is why guns are so popular is that they just are so popular, in the sense that there's 320 million guns in America. And it also makes, given that number, it makes it very hard to see which kinds of gun control laws are really going to make a substantial impact on guns. Americans learned the lesson back in the Prohibition era in the 1920s when we outlawed alcohol. It was a terrible failure. Maybe one of the lessons we've learned from that terrible failure is that trying to prohibit people from doing things that they love that involve easy, small, hard-to-conceal things, it's just not going to be very effective.
That is a truism, isn't it? If you tell someone they can't do something, then the first thing they're going to do is go and try it. I want to ask you historically about the Second Amendment. I think most people don't realize that the roots of those 25, 26 words come from a reaction to, I mean, to a large extent, to the England that the colonials, for want of a better word, to the country that they left. I mean, it all goes back to almost feudal times.
Well, indeed, you know, for your listeners in England who are curious about why Americans treasure guns so much, you know, maybe we can blame King George III, right? Maybe he's the reason. And indeed, I think there's very good cause to believe that one of the reasons why the Second Amendment is in the Constitution was the fear of disarmament that the founding fathers of America had, in part because of their experience in the Revolutionary War. There's no doubt that part of the practices of the English king at the time were to disarm the colonists who were political dissenters. And it came to be viewed as the right to have firearms as being essential to liberty at that time. You might not still, modern ears might think that the access to firearms really isn't essential to liberty. I can understand that perspective. But for the founding fathers, they were dealing with a situation in which they were being forcibly disarmed, and I think the Second Amendment is in part a reaction to it. So before you Englanders look at us and shake your heads, you know, look in the mirror and ask who's really responsible for this situation.
I have mentioned to our listeners on your Facebook page that there are links to your other appearances on various shows here and other pieces that you've written. I was listening to one appearance, and you made a point that when the Constitution was born, for want of a better word, there was a sense that everyone at the time knew that it would be hard for Congress to pass laws. And it was almost like, do you think there was an intentional sort of, not vagueness, but an intentional sort of passing of the responsibility to the states in America to sort of figure the minutiae or the everyday regulation of this out?
Not only was that the result of the Founding Fathers' handiwork with the Constitution, that was indeed their purpose. They wanted to create a strong enough federal government, national government, so that we could fight successfully wars and we wouldn't have serious economic problems in the relationships between states. However, they generally thought that the national government would be a secondary lawmaking body, that the states would retain primary responsibility for seeing to the public welfare. And indeed, that attitude is still very strong in America and is still part of our constitutional heritage in our republic. So there is a sense that these things are generally left to the states. When it comes to firearms, however, it does pose major problems for effective gun control. Because if my state, I live in the state of California, regulates guns very strictly, nothing really prevents Californians from going to our neighboring states like Nevada, which has much looser gun laws, or Arizona, which has much looser gun laws, and going and buying a gun and bringing it back. Guns are so easy to transport across state lines that the gun control laws in one state really can't be that effective unless they're matched by similar kinds of gun control laws in the surrounding states. And so when it comes to firearms, the only real effective solutions are going to be at the national level, not at the state level.
Our guest this week is Professor Adam Winkler from UCLA. Not a day goes by without the news being full of a story of a shooting in a cinema or a school. And I know back in England, anytime anything like that happens, people look at each other and go, what is it with these Americans and their guns? The best thing about your book, Gunfight, was that it sort of outlined how the issue of the right to bear arms is entwined with so many other facets of for want of a better word, the American psyche, race, economic status. Perhaps not so much in your position as a legal professor, but just as a citizen. Can you give us an opinion as to, or your thoughts as to, America's relationship with the firearm?
Well, certainly America has a complicated relationship with the firearm, but it's one in which if there is a dominant person in the relationship, it's the firearm, not the human being, because the firearms really have a hold on the American psyche and the American culture. Part of that is our attraction and history of Wild West films and the frontier and sort of the glorification of guns all throughout that period, and really ever since. If you go back through, for instance, American film history, which is a nice metric of American culture, if not a perfect one, you'll see that in every generation, some of the most popular films or iconic themes in the movies have to do with firearms, from the great westerns to the old James Cagney, Humphrey Bogart gangsters that always had guns to the Godfather films of the 70s and up on through to today's movies that have firearms, bazookas, and cannons, and that's just on the billboard advertising the movie. Right? So we definitely have this strange fascination, but it is historically really tied up with a lot of issues like our relationship with immigrants. Some of the earliest gun control, sort of modern gun control laws keeping people from carrying guns on the streets in America stemmed from a period when a lot of immigrants, recently arrived immigrants from southern European countries were coming here, and they were thought to be too promiscuous with their firearms. And so these laws were passed at least somewhat, not entirely, but at least somewhat to restrict the rights of immigrants. And of course, one of the most important aspects of the American experience has been our relationship with race. And race and guns have been very intertwined from the get-go. America's first gun control laws from the founding period itself were racially restrictive laws that barred African Americans, whether slave or free, from possessing firearms. And those laws continued in America, up until the 20th century in some way, shape, or form. Racially restrictive gun laws. And even in more recent years, like the 1960s, we passed new gun control laws, at least in part because African Americans were rioting in streets in the streets of cities like Detroit and Newark, and people thought that blacks had too easy access to guns, and so we must do something about it. So race has always been part of the story of guns in America. One of the stories I tell in my book, Gunfight, is how the Black Panthers gave rise to the modern gun rights movement. The relationship between race and guns really is profound.
I want to go back to something that you spoke about right at the start there when you talked about sort of the image of America around the world, and it's the Old West and John Wayne and Clint Eastwood. But it is a slight misconception, isn't it, the Old West? Was it really the kind of free-for-all that sort of people think it is when they watch old black and white episodes of Rawhide? I mean, I heard that. I think you talk about some instances where in certain towns you had to turn in your gun or you had to report your gun to the sheriff.
It turns out the Wild West was not really so wild after all. And, we have this image of the gunslingers walking through town, a six-shooter on each hip. He's got a Derringer pistol hidden in his pant leg, maybe a rifle strapped across his shoulder. He's so loaded down with iron, it's amazing he can even get on a horse. But that's kind of our image. And these gunfights at high noon on Main Street, And truth is, these things were extremely rare. We've gone back, and historians have gone back and figured out how many people were murdered every year in famous gun havens, notorious gun havens like Dodge City, Kansas, or Tombstone, Arizona. And they find that these towns averaged less than two murders a year, that gunfights were extremely rare, almost never happened. There were a few of them that made a lot of news, like the famous shootout at the OK Corral, which cost three people's lives and was such an extraordinary event that it made news all over the country. Of course, today in America, if three people die on the streets, it might not even make the front page of the local newspaper. Yeah. Right? So things really are different. In Wild West towns, you generally had to check your gun when you came into town. Residents who lived there were allowed to have a gun in their home, but they weren't allowed to carry those guns in public as a general matter. And visitors who came to town generally had to check their guns with the sheriff. These towns in the Wild West had far more restrictive gun control laws in some ways than those same towns do today.
That's fascinating that it has gone the other way. Well, with that, when we come back, I'm going to ask Professor Winkler about what he sees in the future. Our guest this week is Professor Adam Winkler, the author of Gunfight. In reading what other people say about the book, and the book is a tremendous read. It is written with the sort of the impetus of a legal potboiler. It is a page turner. It is fascinating. It is gripping. It is frightening in all those different ways. But you received great kudos from all sides for being able to you walked a center line. You played it in an old British expression. You played it with a straight bat. With that being said, with the current almost caustic tone of American politics, do you think that there is progress to be made on this issue, where there is a point to be reached where everyone on both sides is satisfied? Or is it like maybe an issue like abortion, where it feels like it's a winner take all, one side will triumph over the other? What do you see moving forward for the issue of gun rights in America?
I think there is room for compromise on issues of gun control in America. I don't think there's any doubt that those who are strong proponents of gun rights have won and will continue to win the basic battle. Is there a right to bear arms in America? I think yes. Not only has the court ruled that way, the Supreme Court of the United States, but with 320 million guns, they're not really going anywhere. And any effort to try to eliminate all those firearms is just destined for failure. So for practical reasons, we're going to have guns in America for a long time. That said, I think that there is room for compromise. I think while the political environment right now is far too toxic, I think that over time, as proponents of gun control understand that there is a right to bear arms, that the guns are not going anywhere, maybe they will target for reforms things that are achievable and that will have some kind of measurable impact on gun crime. And I think over time, people who are big gun rights supporters will eventually come to see that their right to bear arms is not genuinely under attack, and that they don't need to take the defensive posture of fighting off every law, because it will lead us onto the slippery slope towards total disarmament. And that's what many people in the gun world believe today. And so I do think there is compromise, and I'm hopeful. I mean, America has gotten over much bigger problems than this. Slavery, racial discrimination. We're moving past the issues of gay rights very quickly right now. I think America is possible to find compromise on some of these issues, but it's going to take some time.
Let me ask you about the notion of background checks. And like I say, obviously, I grew up in the United Kingdom, and our attitude to guns is, okay, yeah, I have to go and get a license, and I have to keep it locked up, and if I have to wait 5 days, that's just how it is. It's like taking delivery of a car. I've recently become a gun owner myself. I own a couple of shotguns. I go clay pigeon shooting. And I went through the experience. I ordered my gun. I filled out my forms. I waited a couple of hours for my information to come back. I walked out of the place, and it felt quite straightforward. And to be honest with you, and again, my standpoint is obviously colored by my background as someone from North London, it didn't seem too much of a hassle to me. And yet, I understand that even something like that is so divisive for both sides. Are we still at a point I even hate using this word, the word battle. Are we still at the point in this debate where everyone is trenched in and no one's given anything for a while?
I think that's where we are right now in America, indeed. And I think it's going to take some time to get beyond that situation. And you're right, that just getting, requiring people to have a license to possess a firearm or even to have any significant hurdles in permitting for someone to carry a gun in public are generally reacted, generally earn a very negative reaction among many Americans. And part of that story is, again, a function of that 320 million gun number. Because given how many guns there are, it's really impossible to keep guns out of the hands of felons and the mentally ill, the people who you want to keep guns out of the hands of. And so many people feel that since these laws aren't going to really do much to stop the bad guys from getting their hands on guns, that all they're really doing is putting up hurdles for good guys to get their hands on guns. And while I think that rhetoric can be overblown and that reasoning can be exaggerated, and often is, frankly, I think that helps explain why many people fear that even simple things like background checks will lead to bad consequences. There's also a fear that, you know, Americans don't want to become England in terms of their gun policy. Yeah. They want to have guns accessible, and there's a fear that the more you licensing you require people to have a gun or carry a gun, the more likely the government's going to use that information in time to create a gun registry, which will in turn be used to confiscate Americans' guns. I don't think that's a realistic possibility. I do think that is very much feared by many in the gun world in America. Realistically or not, that is their fear.
Well, that does lead me to my exit question. What is it that frustrates you the most about the debate? Is it the toxic tone of the politics? Is it the fact that both sides tend to overreach where they feel the legislation might lead? Obviously, you come from a legal background, so you do look at things in a very factual, in a very logical way. What frustrates you most about the public/political debate on what should happen next?
Well, I think what frustrates me the most is that there's not really a debate. The two sides seem to talk past each other, and that there's such hostility and mistrust by the two sides that they can't come up with reasonable compromises. Both sides seem to take very extreme views that are profoundly unrealistic. In America, gun controllers are constantly pushing for laws that actually won't do anything to reduce crime, like restrictions on certain kinds of sort of military-style rifles, which sound really awful, but are just really not used very often in crime, and are not the real source of America's gun problem or murder problem. Gun rights advocates are constantly pushing to have guns in more places, seemingly without regard to the judgment of those who might be carrying firearms and a willingness perhaps to counsel people to use those firearms too quickly. Just this week, we had someone shot and killed in a movie theater.
Yes.
Over an argument about texting. And the guy who shot him was a retired police officer.
That's right.
If we can't trust the retired police officers with the guns, who can we trust? Right? It raises a real question. So I think that is frustrating. I've worked in a lot of different academic areas, and I find that if you get two people on different sides, they can have a reasoned conversation about the issues, even with profound disagreements as to the facts or the implications of various policies. I find in the gun world, the hostility is so extreme towards both sides that people can't even be in the same room together. And I'm talking about academics who study this rather than political people or activists. And if you can't even get a bunch of sober-minded academics to agree, good luck getting everyone else.
Well, ultimately, the best way to solve any issue is for everyone to become more educated. I would implore any of our listeners to read Professor Winkler's book, Gunfight, The Fight for the Right to Bear Arms in America. I also want to say, Professor Winkler, if you just Facebook Adam Winkler on Facebook, the link comes up, and right there you have all the links to things you've written and to your appearances on different shows. I say to everyone, Professor Winkler is seminal, definitive, whatever it may be. He is the best source to really understand both sides of this debate. From California, Professor Adam Winkler, thank you very much for being on the Email from America.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, All right, email time on the email from America. Now, most weeks when we get to this point in the show, we loosen our tie a little, put our feet on the desk, and get ready for a little irreverence, a little irrelevance. Be honest, you know it. You've heard bad puns and bad Star Trek impressions all in this space. But the word in the show's title that is the most important one is America. This show does come from the New World. And some weeks, what comes out requires a slightly less throwaway tone than the spam in your inbox. If the idea of this show is an homage to the legend that was Sir Alistair Cook and his letter from America, then now and again, it does need to pay homage to the measured tone and the fair and everyman perspective that were his observations. I shoot clay pigeons. It's cheaper than golf, and to be honest, I'm better at it. Now, that's not saying much. I'm no great shot, but I am woeful at golf. I might actually be better at golf if I swung a shotgun at the ball instead of an iron, but there you go. As I said earlier, when chatting with Professor Winkler, I've been through the relatively straightforward process of buying a firearm in my home state, the Commonwealth of Virginia. I keep that shotgun in my house, all locked away. I'm a statistic, I'm part of the national average, over 300 million firearms, one in every third home. I have another gun anecdote, but I have no idea what statistical category it puts me in. A couple of decades ago, way back in my eager youth, because obviously I'm now of indeterminable middle age, I was driving around Washington, D.C. with a couple of other expats. It may Saturday lunchtime, we'd been watching football from the homeland via a satellite dish in a pub, tail end of the season. One or two of us had had a couple of pints on a warm early summer's day, and we were in boyishly laddish form. We pulled up at a stoplight. I was driving, and in the next lane, right across from me in a T-top muscle car were, what we thought, two blondes. Now, this was back when Bon Jovi, Poison, whoever inspired, long, feathered haircuts were all the rage. But it was a little bit of a surprise to us when we realized that it wasn't two girls, but one girl and one guy, with a moustache and a Bon Jovi, Poison, whoever inspired, long, feathered haircut all of his own. So the bloke who was behind the wheel, he turns and he looks at us from behind his wraparound shades, obviously not too thrilled that we'd been, I don't know, wolf whistling or leering at, well, at his girlfriend and at him. Anyway, he looks around, and at least as my mates remember it, looks us in the eyes and says, "If you want to look at something, look at this." And with that, he lifted, just at the top of the gear shift, a small handgun, a little revolver. To be honest, something that's colloquially described as a woman's gun, something that would fit in a handbag. Kind of apt, considering his haircut. The lights changed. He drove off. My mates are all shouting, "Get him!" But I was, if not frozen to the steering wheel, slightly chilled. I do remember that flashing of silver in the May sunlight. I finally followed, and two lights later, we were at a major intersection where, as it happened, there was a demonstration going on. Can't remember what for. It was the late 80s and the early 90s. Can't even remember which decade. It was for something or other. Cops everywhere. So one of the lads jumps out of the car, grabs an officer, who promptly waves both our new friend and ourselves over to the curb. Now, as it turned out, this guy was in possession of an unregistered firearm. We gave the police our personal information and were told that we'd be called by the district attorney if necessary. And that was that. We drove off, leaving our feathered-haired friend still standing over the hood of his car, 10 fingers on the fender. We never heard from the DA, and so we're left with nothing more than a story. I don't have a point with this story, other than it's an anecdote with a gun in it. No point other than men act stupid when they think they're around pretty girls. No point other than lots of people have guns. No point other than life is full of moments and situations. No point other than you can't legislate for every contingency. I do believe that something needs to be done about gun violence. I also get that US society believes in all amendments, not just the second one, which I think makes me like most Americans, somewhere in the middle between the two sides of this particular issue. Then again, isn't that the case with nearly every issue these days? Most of us live somewhere in the middle. But for the extremes to find a way in the middle, well, it means that both sides need to be honest about their own position and more importantly, about the others. Both sides need to be ready to give the other something to look at, something honest and genuine to look at. That's the theme for Bonanza. We did a TV theme last week, a TV theme this week. How could we not play this one, considering all that we talked about? Considering what we talked about, thank you very much to our guest, Professor Adam Winkler. If you want to learn more about this issue, his is the only book you should read. Thanks to our music coordinator, Sam, for putting all the tunes together. Thanks to you for listening. If you were tuning in for Actors Anonymous, we will have more episodes of that in the weeks to come. Hey, it takes a while to make a movie, you know. Anyway, talking of the show, we are now on Twitter, so you can follow us at Zeph Radio. Talking of Zeph Radio and the show, listen to all the shows on Zone 1 Radio. And so, in the words of the Top Gun, U.S. Navy's Top Gun training squadron, have a bandit day. One song to go, it's Make It Stop by the Envy Corps.